Welcome to the annual budget hearings for the City and County of Denver's next fiscal year. This session of the annual budget hearings begins now.
Introduce yourself for the record and all of the things. Thank you so much.
So I'm Kathleen Friedenberg. I'm the deputy chief. So starting with our agency overview, our department mission is that we're dedicated to providing quality, timely, and professional emergency services to those who live in, work in, and visit the City and County of Denver, respecting each other through trust, pride, diversity, integrity, and training, and working together to achieve the highest levels of preparedness, prevention, and community involvement with a dedication to purpose. Before I go much further, I also want to make sure that I know that you've already been introduced to several people on our panel, and I wanted to make sure to take a moment to introduce you to Laura Mathis, our financial manager, and Chai Montoya. She's our outreach coordinator and a strong member of our EDI team. So on this slide, we talk about our four top priorities for 2025. The first one is, our bread and butter, the obvious, and that is quality emergency response services. Part of that relates to response times, keeping with the goal of a 5-minute total response time. And another component that we are continually looking at is making sure that we have the right personnel and the right equipment going to specific incidents. Our second priority for 2025 and will remain is our incumbent training and wellness. It is really important that we make sure that our firefighters are safe and that we pay attention to their physical and their mental wellness. Our third priority relates around fire safety permits and inspections. More specifically, I think it has to do with making sure that our efforts around fire prevention keeps communities safer, and making sure that we keep our high 99% completion intact. The components related to inspections and permits that we're talking about today is more peripherally around development and making sure that we are getting our permitting process through in a succinct way. But more for the purposes of this discussion, it's around operational permitting. That relates to how businesses are conducting their business and doing that in a safe way for communities. Our fourth goal has to do with community risk reduction. The fire department thought it was incredibly important that we showcase community risk reduction, so we created our own community risk reduction team from our own personnel. And it's very important for our communities that we make sure that we're doing everything we can as it relates to educating on fire safety, awareness, preparedness, prevention. So our communities, most often underserved or at risk, are being empowered to engage in their own personal safety. So those are our goals. Um, I know that there are a lot of priorities that Denver Fire Department, along with the mayor's office, with city council, but there are two primary related with city council's priorities for 25 that I think correlate with us very well. One is strengthen community safety by engaging directly with neighborhoods and ensuring investment in community-supported anti-racist public health strategies. And then secondarily, empower the community to improve customer service by sharing information, engaging, and collaborating with residents. There are many aspects of the fire department that fall into these priorities. Most notably, I spoke earlier about fire permitting and compliance, and I will speak to it again. It's important if we have safe businesses. You know that there's a lot of businesses that have things within them that can create safety hazards. Hazardous materials, high piled storage, cooking. There's a lot of things that we could be making sure businesses are keeping safe so our community stay safe. I think that's an important relationship between us and businesses. Also, the incorporation of our med units, I believe, is an important aspect. You know, we have fire trucks, we have fire engines. We started to identify we have a high number of lower acuity calls. That's the calls that are more easily treated by an EMT that oftentimes are in high call volume areas. We have learned that using med units, which are med unit non-firefighter EMTs, to supplement in for the low acuity calls. One, make sure that we have a continuity of service to all communities in the city of Denver. But then also it leaves our engines and our trucks available for higher acuity calls so that we are giving strong service on all aspects. Other things that we have, I heard you speak earlier about co-responders. I don't know if everyone is aware, Denver Fire Department also employs co-responders, but in a different way. We have three clinicians that we work with WellPower, and it's a different approach in that it is not responding at the same time. It's after the fact when our crews have identified a person who would benefit from a way more effective resource than what we are providing. And so after the fact, we employ the WellPower co-responders to come out and help us provide them better resources. Additionally, and I think probably right on the money related to these two priorities, is our community risk reduction team. They are working on so many initiatives, I'm only naming a few. Right now, they are working on a grant that they actually were accepted for. It's $80,000 for these combination fire and carbon monoxide detectors. They are intended for us to provide education to people in neighborhoods, usually those who are vulnerable, who don't already have detectors. We go in, we educate on fire safety, and we also install the detectors for them. Also, we are working on a case study with Regis and CU Denver, and it's related to the four elderly facilities, Brookdale. We have four large ones in the city of Denver. And when you're dealing with an elderly population, one of the largest risks to them are falls. And so this is a grant and an initiative that relates to educating about falls, how do I avoid them, and also providing some fitness, weekly fitness that helps them not have them because they're stronger. And there's a coinciding app that they're able to use to kind of blend it all together. So it's a study they're conducting. Also, we have the ones that I think are important to just our community, and that is distracted driver training, extinguisher training, life safety training. And I know youth is very important right now in all of our priorities. And we just recently had our career exploration camp headed up by Chai. And I know that the majority of City Council contributed towards that, so I'm sending you my gratitude for that. I think it's a great opportunity to bring all diversity, genders, at a young age to know more about our career and also teach them safety. And then also, of course, the Boy and Girl Scout Mile High Force event day. It's actually a weekend. That's a co-initiative between police, sheriff, and fire and other agencies. And then obviously we're in DPS schools doing sound off training. That's primarily for second and third graders. So I want to take a second to just line out I know you know us, but so that you understand how we're broken up. We have our fire chief, Chief Fulton, and then myself. Then we have six divisions that we're divided by. Our fire prevention division is permits, inspections, and building. Our technical services division is dispatch, the line shop. Line shop is our techies. They have all of our radios. They have our drone program, which we created from Roots and has been highly successful. We have our fleet and repairs, warehouse where we get our uniforms, and then things related to our firehouses, our facilities. Admin division is our HR, our internal affairs, our arson unit, recruiting, community risk reduction, and our PIO. Safety and training is where our new recruits come to go through the academy. You were all out there at Fire Ops 101. That's where we do all of our training. It's also where we train our incumbents, and we have our CMCB certifications. That's Colorado Metropolitan Certification Board. And we're also part of that. That's how we keep ourselves certified and professional. And then our operations division, obviously, that's the division who responds to calls. They're the crews in the firehouses. It's also technical rescue. It's our EMS education team, which is new to us and doing extremely well, and our wildland program. And then the last is our airport division, Den, and that one is all-encompassing because firefighting at the airport is different than firefighting on landside. So they have their own operations, their own training, and then they also handle fuel inspection. So talking back about our priorities, this slide I think relates most to our goal number one, which has to do with quality emergency response. I know that this has been a hot topic for a while, so I won't spend a ton of time on it, but just so that we understand, there is turnout time and there is drive time, and that is a 5-minute total or 5-minute 20 seconds depending on the situation we're responding on. So for the 60 seconds for our turnout time, that's the time it takes from us to get the call with the firehouse, to get on the rig and get en route. And that's 60 seconds. If it's a call where we're required to dress as though we're going into an immediate dangerous for life and health scene, fires, things involving chemicals, things we need to wear our bunking gear and our SCBA for, we get an extra 20 seconds. So that's 80 seconds. So for us, we are great at that. We have had a consistent 92% compliance rate. Then the second half has to do with after we leave the doors, we roll out the door, and how long it takes to get to that scene. Right now, pretty consistently, we've been riding at a 68% compliance rate. There's a lot to consider with that. I like to equate it to understanding our city as compared to other cities or rural areas. Our city is very population dense. We have a lot of housing, compact housing, a lot of construction. We have another aspect to this to consider, which are outliers. Outliers for us are if you have really bad weather or we forget to hit the button. For your awareness, that all goes into the matrix, that we don't take anything out when we're getting our percentage. So, addressing inequities. I believe we, this is a very important point. And mostly, I think the most important thing for us is maintaining our response times and the way that we are responding to calls in a quality way. Having that and making the commitment that that goes across the entire city, it's no different, we keep the same standard for everyone, is important when it comes to equity. Also, enhancing our recruitment efforts. Obviously, it's very important. I've learned that in the fire department, if you have an emergency and it doesn't fit into a neat box, usually the fire department gets it. So that means that we really need people who have a varied and diverse talent, mindset, history for us to be great problem solvers. Not to mention the fact that it is nice when you have a response, a workforce that fits the face of your community so that when you're responding, that person sees a familiar face. Also, it's important for us to keep adequate training opportunities and keep our employee morale and wellness up through training. Through every training we have, there is an EDI component. And also, for awareness, we're 96% done with our RSJ Academy courses. Additionally, our EDI team is extremely active. We are currently going through our EDI team all of our directives and standard operating guidelines to look through an equity lens and make sure we're not creating any barriers for our people. Some examples of equity related to our recruiting efforts. We are working with other safety agencies to discuss and move forward with issues related to the use of marijuana when it comes to hiring. I think we're all aware laws have changed. Society has changed and we need to evolve along with it because it opens us up to higher opportunities for larger pools. And that's for us changing the marijuana, no marijuana rule from 36 months to 12 months. Also, targeting women and people of color with our recruiting efforts, the way that we're doing it, we like to employ our employee groups. Being one of the co-founders of Women Firefighters of Denver, it is very important to us that we do what we can to bring up those after us and in numbers, but quality. And so I can give you an example of WFFD and FIRE, Firefighters Incorporated for Racial Equality, panned together to make Project Ignite, which I believe is in its fifth or sixth year now. And it is where we bring together all women who are interested in the career of firefighting and give them a day with hands-on, no judgment. This is how this goes. This is what you can expect. This is what's in an academy. And I can tell you for the last 2 years, we've had a waiting list for that. And we've had quality women come through. Also, we do things like pre-academy fitness. That's helping people who, they bring the it factor, the ability to be great on this job, but maybe they need help being getting the fitness part together. We also have the CAP program, which is a program that is like a mentoring program for people we've identified would be great for the job, but they need to know more about it and they need to have a little ripening on the vine. Also, we have we're part of the Civil Service Rule Working Group, and this group is going through and looking at the civil service rules also with an equity lens, and also looking at wording that would not deter candidates. So that you see on this graph here, it talks about our current, the total population of Denver Fire Department. We're at about 32% people of color and 8% women, honestly, which is double what it was when I came on this job. And you will find, since this administration, the majority, the half of that are women who came on the job in the last 5 years. You'll also know, since 2021, all of our classes combined, the total recruits have been about 20% female and 49% people of color. So I believe we're making strides. So now, this is the budget composition by fund. Our total base is $219 million. And you can see general fund is operations and administration, and then we have our special revenue funds. Our special revenue funds are wildland, our den, airport internal billings, and then our pension special revenue fund. If you break that down, the composition of this fund, you can see it's very lopsided. We are clearly people. We're 97% personnel. And then the rest is service and supplies. So for us, service and supplies equates to hose, gloves, AED pads, how we clean our bunking gear to keep from being exposed to carcinogens. So it's an important component. So our expenditures, you can see the dark blue line is our expenditures by year. If you look at the light blue bar graph at the bottom, you can see that there is a gradual rise from 21 onward. That consists primarily of our IGAs. That's our agreements with Sheridan, Inglewood, Skyline, Glendale. That's got a built-in 3% increase. Then if you look at the 2025, there is an increase, and that's based off of our increased permit compliance initiative that we'll be employing in 2025. And then, let's see. If you look at from 24 to 25 on the red line, which is our uniform FTEs, you will see there'll be a slight increase, and that will be based on our movement of some positions to wildland and our increase by three for the med unit, an additional med unit. All right, so going through our changes to our summary. So first, typically we have two classes of 24. That's sort of our norm. It's how we manage attrition for the most part. But looking at it, for this 2025 budget, we're going to go with one academy class that will be at a cost of 1.36. That's temporary. And then another temporary is going to be that we're going to reduce our unused ASL payout account. That'll be 1.7. And then we're going to allocate expenses for six support positions to the Wildland Fund because they have a nexus to Wildland. It's going to be two ship commanders, three assistant chiefs, and one captain. And then for revenue, this is one I find interesting because when it comes to inspections and staffing, you can do what you can do to try to keep businesses safe, but now we have the great fortune of having a full cadre of inspectors, and with that, more ability for us to, while we're inspecting, also reinforce compliance to operations permits. So that means hood systems, use of acetylene, hot works, CO2, things that you would find during a typical inspection and what businesses use that need to be permitted. Our initiative is going to be to push more for compliance in those areas around permitting. And then lastly, a $215,000 cut, which will be the natural outcome based off of having one academy class. We have training staff that we will move back to the street, and so they will rebalance some of the overtime, so we'll save in that way. So I think I've spoken about this with Chief Fulton oftentimes, and every time we talk about what are the things that we would streamline, the changes we would make, it needs to be with the highest goal that it has little impact to the public and little impact to the firefighters we have rolling out the door every day. And that's how we approach this. So personnel reductions, obviously it's the 4.5 million, but still being able to effectively deliver our services as we would normally. And that also includes managing attrition. I think that it's all part of it. But I think that it's doable for 25. Also, with this new initiative around the increase in compliance around permits, we are going to be able to do that with our current staffing. So it's a really great way to make sure that we're using our staff the best way and contributing. So looking back, this is a slide that just relates to the 2024 temporary rent and utility assistance budget amendment. For that amendment, we contributed 2.25% from our service and supplies. I think we all agree it is very important, and the fire department sees it this way, that if you keep roofs over someone's head, that's the way you keep them safe, and we care about safety. So with that, the thing we keep in mind, though, is that with service and supplies, we have completely used our budget for the last few years, so we use that. So it has to do with having the capacity to get the equipment we need and keeping in mind things are getting more expensive. So this is approved capital improvement programs. I know you all have been to the training facility, so this building on the left for you is what we used to call Ricky's Rib Shack. And it was still working when I went through the academy, but it has since been condemned for many years. It's not structurally sound, so we can't burn it anymore. So we ended up trying to put a Band-Aid on it by creating our own structure using Connex boxes. And we got the Connex boxes, put it together, made it look similar to what a multifamily unit would look like, so that we're fighting fire in an area that would be common to Denver. But you can see by looking at it, it's reaching its end stage lives as well. We have the burn tower. I know you guys saw the tower over there. That one you cannot burn in, but it has a propane prop within it, which is no longer functional. So we are just can show nothing but gratitude for the opportunity to be able to get a new burn building, which is what this is. And we're looking forward to that. As soon as it's authorized, we're going to be getting it going. And the cool thing about this one is that it's Denver-specific for real-life occupancies. So when it comes to us, we think about training SCARs. If we did all of our training on a propane prop, all you do is you open your bale, you shut your bale, you're done. But in real life, you know, fires are way more deep-seated than that. It takes longer. So if we're training you to do this, how are you going to do that in real life? So having this is, I can't tell you how incredible this is. But also, we have increased certifications that require more live burns. And we had been utilizing other agencies' burn buildings. And for the city of Denver to have our own, I think, is commensurate. So a huge vote of point of gratitude in that. And I believe that is it. There's an appendix in the back related to staffing. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
And you did a great job keeping us on track. So really appreciate that conciseness. We will break over to some questions. And again, I'll just remind folks that questions can be submitted up until Monday, it sounds like, for these presentations today. So please submit those, any unanswered questions or follow up to Angela, and we'll get questions answered from the folks that need to answer them. So with that said, we will get started with Councilwoman Torres. You're up again.
Thank you. I was always the first to raise my hand in class. So. Deputy Chief, thank you so much. And thank you for presenting on behalf of the department today. And I just want to say and remind kind of our community and everyone in this room, you are the first and highest ranking woman in the department's history to serve in the role. Well, it is not because of your identity. It does matter because you're trying as a department also to attract more women into this space and more people of color. And the more that we see, the more meaningful of a message that sends. So I appreciate that. I do have a question about the med unit. So the med unit was not mentioned. I assume it's not expanding, but I would love some follow-up on any statistics or metrics or measures of success for that. We have one in the Council District 3, Station 20, and I know it's, I think it's just one of two in the city, but just want to understand, I think, if it's a successful measure of response, if they're able to go out to things that the truck doesn't need to go out to. So just want to lay that out as follow-up for me would be great. And then the other piece is also a follow-up, but you mentioned you have a civil service working group that's coming through the civil service rules. And I and probably others on council would like to just open up the conversation about also combing through the civil service charter language and creating an opportunity to talk about that, because we would never need to send something like that to voters, but it is language in concrete that's probably been there for a really long time. So as you comb through rules and try to prepare efficiencies and improvements for the department there, please consider us for a conversation about charter language.
Absolutely, and we've already been having some of those discussions, so I would really love to meet with you offline and talk about that further.
Thank you.
And as far as the med unit goes, I can't break down each of the med units. I can give you that information later. Yeah. But we actually have four med units. We have four.
Great.
So we have one downtown, it's out of Station 4, and I can tell you that med unit, which is in the middle of downtown, it runs most calls of all the units in the city, all the rigs in the city. So it's been hugely beneficial. The second one is Station 20, which is in Northwest Denver off of 6th and Knox.
West Denver.
Knox? Yeah. West Denver.
I'm sorry, I should be clear. West.
That's funny. And the third one is out of Station 8, which is on the east side of downtown.
Okay.
And then the fourth one, which is our newest one, thank you, is out of Station 26, which is off of MLK in Quebec, which has made a huge impact because they're supplementing around where we have a higher call volume around the unhoused facilities, and it seems to be going very well. So I'll get you more numbers on that later.
I appreciate that, and I'm thrilled to hear that it's even more than I remember at 2 and is 4, so thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Firehouse is calling us saying, can we have a med unit? So they're making an impact, that's for sure.
Love it. Thank you so much. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you. Next up, we have Councilwoman Sawyer, followed by Councilman Watson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Thank you. You guys are extraordinary. I can't say for my community the amazing partnership that we receive from our 3 different fire stations and from downtown. We're just really, really grateful for everything that you all do. Question for you about the burn building, the new burn building. So we don't start projects until they're fully funded. Is this $1.2 million fully funded so we can get you that as soon as possible?
It's my understanding that it is.
Is that 100% of the cost in $1.2 million?
Yeah, we funded the entire ask, so I think that's everything they need.
Awesome. Okay, great. And then a question for you about budget reductions. So last year, Chief Fulton stood in front of us and he said, I understand I'm from a big family and sometimes it's just not your year and this is not our year, right? God bless him for that. He was not wrong. But this is the second year in a row where it's not your year. It's not anybody's year this year. So how long can the fire department continue to sustain a lack of investment from our city before services start to decline? Can we make it through this year? Do we need to have a conversation in 2026 that is very different? Because you guys have been amazing about taking it for the team. But at some point, we have to continue to invest in our fire department or you will not be able to provide the services that we need you to provide that are so incredibly important.
Understood. We have lots of ideas on great big programming and things that we can do, but when it comes down to it, our number one resource is personnel. Yes. And as long as we're keeping staffed, I believe we're going to be okay. I think that future conversations, we will need to be talking more because things do always get more expensive. Just do. This is just reality. And that's, future conversation. But for right now, right here, I believe we're able to roll out the door, provide quality service, and, next year.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to respond to that in part. There was a question that came up earlier in the week of why did we make the decision to dip into fund balance and what were the trade-offs around that? And one of those was specifically this question about a fire academy. You'll notice when we get to other safety departments, our fire department is actually the strongest of all of our safety agencies on current staffing and authorized strength. They're actually very close to authorized strength, whereas you'll see both the sheriffs and the police department are still well below authorized strength and trying to catch up. And so we looked at potentially eliminating both classes of the fire academy, which would have put us back behind again. We kept and funded one of these academy classes so that we do keep steadily on track to total staffing. That was one of the things we were not willing to cut, was one of the reasons why we used fund balance. And so I just want to name that they are in a much better position than the other two agencies on total staffing, but this academy class is important to keep it there. That's why we invested in it.
Okay, really appreciate that. Thank you.
We really appreciate that support, knowing that we staff kind of differently than other safety agencies. It's important that we keep that in mind.
All right.
I'm good, thanks.
All right, great. Next, Councilman Watson with Councilwoman Parody.
Thank you, Committee Chair. And I'll kind of build off of Councilwoman Sawyer's question and Mayor Johnson's response. First and foremost, thank you, Deputy Chief Rendenberg. I think the work that you and your team do on a daily basis throughout the city. We don't have favorites in public safety, but thank you very much for all that you do. It is our communities rely on you and your folks on a daily basis. Director Saldate highlighted a level of volatility, and I use, that's my term, in attrition and turnover rates across public safety teams, except for DFD. Can you share the strategic decisions DFD has made to invest in their professional staff that stabilizes these important data points that you look at as far as associate or employee experience within DFD? Why are they staying? Why are they staying longer? And why are your rates pretty stabilized compared to public safety from your perspective?
And you're saying specifically professional staff, not sworn?
Well, I'm saying everyone. I mean, your rates across the board have been stable. Maybe 1% variance pre and post COVID. Share a little bit as to what your strategic process has been, investing in your people, ensure that that stability remains.
Right. So I'll split it out. Professional staff, I believe that they stay because our culture. We function as a family. And I think that that makes a huge difference in the way that we invest in each other and are committed to each other. Because I know that you could go to private entities and probably make a buck more. But I know our professional staff because they stay because they believe in something bigger. As far as it relates to sworn, we've historically built the culture where, you know, they stay for the duration of their career. And I think that that's stayed. You can see that in our attrition rate. It's very low and most primarily caused through drop. So everybody understands what drop is. It's when you officially retire, but then you stay on for up to another 5 years, also receiving your retirement benefit. It's how we keep institutional knowledge in place a little bit longer, and we keep that experience longer. So usually that's how we would lose people, is just through natural attrition. On the other end of that, we've made some changes in our academies, how we are teaching. We're going away from the old school teaching model and going more towards adult learning type models. We've also done a flip-flop, where now we have switched EMS to go first for their EMT certification, then their academy last. That way our wellness team has the ability to connect with them early while they're in EMS to help them learn how to work out right. Self-care, we've had huge reduction in injuries because of that. Doing that up front has really made a difference. So we're gonna continue with that model. So that's, I answered your question.
It did, and I think DNA culture experience from all of your rank and file as well as professional staff matters, and I want to applaud you and your leadership team for making that a part of your process. I also want to congratulate you on maintaining a 99% rate for safety permits and inspections on 655 of the budget book. Share that the number of fire safety inspections have remained flat since 2018. I know in District 9, which are pretty dynamic growth within D9 and across the city. The city continues to grow, yet your inspection rate remains flat. Can you share kind of the why for that? Is that an investment of staff? You've shared that your inspection staff are increasing. Explain a little bit as to why the rates of inspection for over a five-year period has remained flat.
I think that you hit on the majority of it is they're able to get to inspections based off of their staffing capability. And then secondarily, we're also dealing with vacancies in businesses. So, you know, I think the majority of that has to do with their bandwidth to be able to inspect, and they're getting it at 100%. And then also just understanding the outliers that we do have vacancies where businesses have gone out of business and we're not inspecting them anymore. That would be my answer to that.
Okay, thank you so much, Deputy Chief. No further questions.
Great, thank you, Councilman Watson. I did get a message that Channel 8 might be down, and so I'm just double checking just to make sure. Okay, so we'll go ahead and go to Councilwoman Parity. It is down? I'm hearing otherwise. So they're checking to see if it's streaming versus TV.
I think that's what it is, because folks who are watching it on Channel 8, like on the actual TV,
yeah,
it doesn't tend to go down, but if you're watching it online, I think that's when the feed goes down, so for folks who are watching online.
Okay, got it. Okay.
My phone, Councilman Watson's mom.
My mom can
yeah,
see us.
Yeah, there she is. Your mom.
Just watching.
Okay, it's back.
Streaming
it's is back up, according to Luke, what? So we can go forward. So I'm going to go to Councilwoman Parity and then to Flynn. So just if you guys didn't hear, streaming is back up. TV is fine. Councilwoman Parity, and then Flynn.
Great. Thank you so much, Madam Chair. So a couple of questions. I'm curious about what you guys have seen in terms of calls to encampments. I know that that's been such a huge piece of, such a huge call volume, especially for certain seasons. Obviously, it's been summer, so probably a little bit less of people burning things to try to keep warm. But even last winter, after a lot of the downtown encampments were moved into House 1000 sites, I'm curious if you've seen a change in that.
In the encampment type responses. It's kind of a trade-off, honestly. The decrease in encampment response is a little bit of an increase in the in-house shelters, probably just based off population. And you're right, based on summertime, that has been a decrease.
Okay, thank you so much. We'll follow up when winter comes to see what the change has been there.
DPD can talk about that too, because I know we have dramatically decreased 911 calls to encampments over the course of the year.
That they can update. Everyone understands we respond together, yeah. So they would have the same numbers we would.
Okay, so you guys always respond jointly to that, even if it's a call about something burning?
I should be clear. If it's something that's related to, you have an encampment where we're addressing the encampment, we're together. If it's like an EMS call, we would not have PD with us. But I'd be happy to get you those numbers so that you know how often.
Yeah, I would love that. And I was curious because I know you guys get a high volume of calls that are actually about fire at encampments or have in the past.
And it's also at times kind of hard to track because we're talking about, you know, a population that could be pretty move around quite a bit. And so to be able to pull a stat can be challenging.
Okay, thank you. We'll follow up a little bit on what you do know, I guess. The other question I have that I will defend as being budget related is how is the fire code regulatory kind of rewrite going? I know there's been a group meeting and working really hard on that within your kind of policy team. I would have some expectation that could have a little bit of cost saving effect once things are a little simpler because it's a very dense code. So I'm just curious if there are any updates or things that you might all be bringing to council soon about that.
I know that Division Chief DeBar is working pretty much tirelessly on that. Yeah, and I think the hope was to have it together by the end of the year. So he's working hard on it. He has not given me specifics. I'm sure part of that is the negotiation of what is going to be the content, and I have not gotten that update yet.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Councilman Flynn, you are up with Pro Tem Romero Campbell following.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Chief, the next slide in your appendix, the one slide in the appendix, I was a little confused, and I don't think I've seen this on other safety department slides, but what is the difference between effective strength, the green line, and adjusted effective strength?
With it, I'll walk you through the whole thing, if that works for you.
Sure.
Okay, so the red line, that's our authorized strength. That's our 1,114 people, right? The blue line, that's our actual strength that we have at the time.
That's the number of firefighters in uniform.
That's the number of sworn that we have.
Right.
Then the green line is our effective strength. So that's the firefighters who are trained and able to respond to calls, minus recruits, ones that are still in the academy and they're not trained yet. Okay. Then the last one is our adjusted effective strength. I know that you've heard Chief Fulton say it before. Our career rates among the highest for injury, and so we deal a lot with line of duty, non-line of duty injuries, so that adjusted strength, and also we have a high military population. So the adjusted strength is our current effective strength, and then minus people who are on line of duty injury, or on like FML for their family or line of duty injury, and military.
Thank you. I noticed on page 653 of the budget book, in recent years, very good improvement on plan review times, being on time, but it's still 70%. That means 30% of plan reviews take longer than the time we can tell folks. Is there any budgetary reason for that that we can solve, or what is the root cause of that?
So I know Chief DeBar is working with the Tiger teams to figure out how we're going to streamline the process. He put one thing into effect that I think is affecting it already for 24, and that's where he took one of his FTEs and strictly towards intake and is decreasing the time by about 3 weeks now. His anticipation is we're going to be at about 75% compliance. So just for clarity, all of them get done, 75% of them will be done within the timeline for 24. And budgetarily, you know, it's always nice to have more staffing so that we're not having to wear more hats. But for right now, this is our fix we're using, and it seems to be running downtime.
Thank you. Pro Tem Romero Campbell, followed by Councilman Cashman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, you just answered the question. That was my question that I had on this slide. So thank you very much for the work you do in the partnership. I do have another question. I know that in planning October, we've talked a little bit about, you know, recruitment class and making sure that we have the staffing. I'm sure the analysis is going on of like who's retiring and how do we make sure that we have things properly staffed. In this last year, I also feel like there's a component of the civil service piece and review that we've heard from other departments as far as that review. How does that impact the staffing and the ability to get people through in a timely manner?
Right. When you look at outerlying agencies, they've really streamlined their process for hiring and shortened it by far. And I think that's been our challenge, is how do we move people through more quickly and get people hired before we lose them to other agencies, especially around quality people and the diversity portion of that. And I think that one thing that I do appreciate is we have a new director in civil service, and she's working really well with being open-minded to change. And a lot of that has to do with getting our physicals done more quickly, moving people, getting their psychologicals done, having more vendor choice so that we can move more people more quickly. The other component is there's a lot of times where we're having academies at the same time police are having the academy. So, you know, it's the question of does civil service have the people they need to move that quantity of people through and the vendors they need so that we have full classes. And that's the bottom line. So it's components like that, primarily the steps to get them through the process and increase in vendors to get time down.
Thank you. Just out of curiosity, like estimated, how many recruits or folks were in the pipeline that went through civil service to get to your class of 24? Okay. Are we talking?
This is one really good problem to have for us. We don't have a shortage of people applying. We typically can have 1,400 applicants, and we whittle it down to 24. Often we look at having a ratio of candidates that are eligible, 5-to-1 ratio, and that's kind of how we view it. If we get a 5-to-1 ratio to get to our 24, then we'll get it. And we're lucky, we've got really great applicants. It's just, how do you whittle that down? But that's it, we get a 5-to-1, and then we whittle it down.
That's a lot. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next up is Councilman Cashman, followed by Councilwoman Gilmore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Chief, I'm thinking we now serve, in addition to the city and county, we serve Glendale, Sheridan, Englewood, and Skyline.
Yes.
How does that, I'm wondering the level of FTE stress that puts on service to Denver. Can you talk about that? I'm not real clear how that all in plays.
I don't know that I would say that it creates FTE stress. I think that's built into the matrix. We're occupying their firehouses in those jurisdictions. The only thing that would affect the city of Denver is if there's a major incident, say in Glendale, and we have committed that we also shift resources to assist to make a full, what we call an effective response force, making sure that we've got the right number of people, right number of equipment. But we also have, I think, accommodated that in that we have what's called a gap map. So if we're shifting people, we shift our people. So we've got the coverage. As long as we've got the staffing for the FTEs for those firehouses, I think we're accommodating it very well. Yeah, we work very well with those agencies, by the way.
Thank you. Those four outside agencies, how many FTEs do they represent, do you know? About?
I'm going to estimate it's probably four firehouses, so 20, okay. Well, Each rig is 15 people.
Yeah.
That's you guys.
Great. That's good enough. Thank you. My other question, to clarify, the 12 months marijuana use, do we ask applicants to sign something that says they have not used marijuana for that period? What is that policy?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know that I can answer at this time. I know that, I don't know if they sign it swearing it. I know they're tested for it.
Okay.
So.
And do we have anything similar for alcohol?
I don't believe so. I know we test, but I don't believe we've got a limit saying that you haven't used alcohol in a certain period of time. I know we don't. It's marijuana and illicit drugs, not alcohol.
Okay, I think that's pretty insane. I mean, every time we hear from Denver General Hospital, they tell us that alcohol far outweighs all other drugs put together and the damage on our community. So I don't know whether we should lean on alcohol or take a more rational approach to cannabis. That's just interesting. Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Councilman, I would encourage you to raise that with DPD when they're here, because they both have either a 5 or 10 year ban on marijuana you have to attest to, and you have to take a polygraph test later to then respond to the same question. If you fail the polygraph, you're then thrown out of the applicant pool. And so I think this is an absurd practice that is still in place. We should look at changing.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I've been a teetotaler for 36 years, hence my ever present cup of tea. So I have no particular doggy in this fight. I just think we need to take, as the mayor indicated, a more pragmatic approach to public safety.
I think that's fair, and if you even look at fire department statistics around alcohol use, around the wellness component of that, you're striking it on many levels.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and I apologize. I need to put actually Councilwoman Alvidrez up next, and then Councilwoman Gilmore.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for being here. I care deeply about all the wonderful things that the firefighters do. I would say my story used to be about my son getting locked in our car as a baby and you guys coming to save him, but recently to find out the hazmat services that you provide due to the incident that I experienced it was amazing to see the resources that you need and the resources that you have. I see a decrease in personnel services of $856,000 due to budgeting a single recruit class instead of two, and I see the emphasis in supporting staffing, and so I'm curious about that.
I think it's leveraging our drops that we can manage it for next year, just having one recruit as opposed to two. So it's looking at our immediate attrition rates, and we still can support that.
Can you go?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Laura Mathis, I'm the financial manager of Denver Fire. I think that question, it reiterates that we can still support just one recruit class for next year, looking at our attrition rates that we will have next year. So right now we are fully staffed and we can accommodate that just because we do currently have high staffing.
So, really fast. I'm sorry. Steve Bond, Budget and Management. So that 856 is the reduction in the actual personnel account. And then underneath it, we also have a reduction of 506, and that's for the equipment that goes along with the recruit class. And then also we have the reduction in the training officers because there's only going to be one class instead of two.
Okay. I appreciate that. One of the things that I am wondering about as we add density is, do you have the equipment and people that you need, even though we may be fully staffed, but also the equipment for the new type of structures that we're seeing around the city.
Right. So that's an interesting question, because we see lots of different types of construction going on, kind of some creative things going on. I believe right now, you know, you're functioning well with what we have, but we are exploring other alternatives, particularly around our trucks. A lot of it relates to our roadways. It's really important that we are accounting for different types of transportation and that we are encouraging that. It tends to narrow our roadways, and being able to navigate those in a tower can be challenging. So that's part of the equipment discussion we have going on. How do we navigate cities better that are tighter? In terms of building height, we've had high rises forever. So we've got it down. If you're higher than 7 stories, we're going to do it a different way because we know our tower won't reach above 7 stories. So for right now, you know, we're exploring, but primarily it's around navigation more than it is around attacking a building. Fire attack, I should.
Interesting. That's good to know. I appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you. Councilwoman Gilmore, followed by Councilwoman Lewis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Deputy Chief, good to see you. Thank you for all the work you're doing, and we're excited about Station 40 out in District 11, Green Valley Ranch. That's been a long time coming, and so that will hopefully help with those response times and everything. I have a couple of questions, or maybe you can answer my couple of questions, about the expansion of the wildland. The Wildlands Special Fund. I'm looking at it, and it's good that it's increased, but wanted to have you maybe do an overview of how that fund really works. You know, the Montbello and Green Valley Ranch community and Denver International Airport were surrounded by short grass prairies, and the threat of wildfire is always an issue, but I don't want to make any assumptions that this has anything to do with training or emergency response or emergency management that we might need to see in coordination with the Denver Fire Department, but just would love for you to kind of give an overview of what this line item is, and that will hopefully help me understand if there's any gaps possibly around the possible risks that we could see in the far northeast. With the Rocky Mountain Arsenal National Wildlife Refuge being right there close to residential.
Sure. So wildland is a special revenue fund that functions in a pretty interesting way, because it's a fund that covers for equipment that goes out. We have three different type engines that we have in wildland, and then we have about 218 red carded firefighters that can go out to wildland. The way that it works is they go out, they go to their 13 to 14 day deployment, or 3 to 14 day deployment, or our equipment is rented, or they all go together. It depends on what the complement is. Once they come back, we pay them. Then the federal government eventually reimburses us. So it's a continually evolving fund, and we use it. It rotates. With that, I'm trying to figure out what is pertinent. When it comes to Denver, we don't consider that necessarily wildland fires, even though there's open spaces. We have set up so that we have our outskirt firehouses are trained. They're not red carded, they're everything short of red carded, so that, and we have of all of our wildland facility or equipment on our outskirt firehouses. That way, if there is a fire, we're able to utilize the crews to take out the wildfire equipment and go ahead and extinguish fires. And we do that. Like a perfect example is 4th of July. 4th of July, we had two multifamily fires just in this one day, five residential fires, structure fires, and 119 weed and trash fires. And that's how we were able to be so successful, is that we can fight fires in state, out of state, but we also have the equipment we utilize in the city. Was a long answer, sorry.
I really appreciate that. Thank you for differentiating both of those. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And last rounding it out is Councilwoman Lewis.
Oh, thanks. Really appreciate it. Quick question, and it's along the same lines as Councilwoman Alvidrez. the decrease in personnel services due to the budgeting, instead of having one or two recruit classes, you now have one. And it says, I'm just curious as to what two recruit classes provides you all. If you budget it for that originally, recruit classes, I'm guessing it serves a need, and I'm just curious of what that need would have been.
Right, I appreciate the question. We have the typical 48 recruits come through because there is a trend with our the retirement drop. We have an equation we use, which is basically who is required to drop, and we multiply it times 3.5, and that's pretty much what we anticipate will be leaving for that year. And if we keep it at 48, we tend to stay on a cadence that follows the pattern of our department. There are times that that's different. We have had years where we've had a lot larger drops, and we've had to have discussions about supplementing that. And we did that. It wasn't last year. It was the year before. We had a lateral class in the middle. Was it last year? The year before. We had three. We put a lateral class in so that we could boost up. But typically, the two academy classes just keeps us in cadence.
Good to know. Thank you. One more question here. Oh, dang. Maybe not. I think I lost my tab. It said police and fire retirement, and it was maybe one point something million dollars in the budget book, and it was there for 2023, gone for 24, and gone for 25. And I was just curious as to, or pension, that's what it said. If you could just tell me that story, Justin. You know, I like a story. Police fire pension. It's on page 658. 1,048,565. Then there's the public safety SRF. Very last thing.
Steve Mond, Budget and Management. I believe it's the portion that is moved to EDOS. We'll double check it, but we separate the funds for retirement into the FPPA pension fund. We move that out because it's paid out of that fund, right, for retirement. So we will double check, but I think it's the portion that might have hit EDOS. But
okay. Thanks. If you follow up, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you. Any unanswered or follow-up questions or questions you didn't get in the queue, please feel free to email Angela. I'm going to hit this over to the mayor to close us out.
Thank you again. Thanks so much, Deputy Chief, for being here for the great presentation. I also just want to highlight one real success that you mentioned briefly, but folks might have missed. We've talked about the priority of diversifying our safety teams and across all agencies in the fire department, and Deputy Chief, and she's really been leading an effort to do that in the fire department. And I think you might have missed a quite powerful statistic she gave, which was over the last several years of recruit classes, they are now at 20% women in those classes. That's up from less than 5%, so almost 4x the number of women in those recruit classes. And people of color went from just under 30% to now about 50%, so really have doubled the number of people of color entering the force. And so big deal that in the new recruits of firefighters, you're seeing your leadership have a dramatic impact on both incredibly high quality applicants and applicants that look like the City and County of Denver. So just want to name that 4x increase in women and almost a 2x increase in people of color is a great success on your effort. So thank you for all you're doing.
Well, with that said, thank you to the fire department, and we are going to be switching gears and going into the DEDO, the Denver Economic Development Opportunity presentation in about 11 minutes. And I'm moving, so thank you.